believe that you can build an amazing life of significance by serving fewer, wealthier clients extremely well. We also believe you can do it faster and with less effort than you ever thought possible. Let us show you how to race up the hierarchy of advisor success. Welcome to the Preeminent Financial Advisor Podcast.
I'm Paul Loftes at CEG Worldwide, and at CEG, the number one coaching firm for financial advisors, we believe you can build and have an amazing life of significance by serving fewer but wealthier clients and doing it extremely well. CEG Worldwide is a coaching firm that helps financial advisors accelerate their success and build simple yet elegant wealth management businesses that are indispensable to the right affluent clients.
And I'm Catherine McBreen from CEG Insights. CEG Insights was born of a strategic fusion of two industry powerhouses, Spectrum Group, a leader in affluent investor research, and the research team of CEG Worldwide, the number one coach for financial advisors. With over 20 years of affluent investor research and extensive coaching experience, CEG Insights empowers senior executives to engage with financial advisors, sharing insights and actionable steps for sustainable organic growth.
Well, a great big welcome to all of you out there and this episode of the Preeminent Advisor Podcast. My name is Paul Loftes.
And I'm Catherine McBreen, and it's great to have you all here listening today.
Kathy, so excited for our audience and our topic of conversation today. So we're just going to jump right into it. We're going to be talking about a very unique market segment and some of the great trends and research and data insights that you have from your recent study. So we're going to be highlighting some findings and some practical application from the 25 million plus opportunity play to win report. Climbing the wealth ladder, proven strategies for attracting and retaining ultra wealthy clients. So I guess, Kathy, first of all, give us some context about studying the $25 million market. Most advisors probably look at that and say, whoa, that's not who I'm normally dealing with.
Yeah. Well, as you can guess, this is a little harder sample for us to get from a research methodology approach. So we use a lot of different methods. We get most of our sample from an online panel, but we have to really scrutinize every single answer, make sure that people aren't making things up or it doesn't make any sense. Like, we don't want any 25-year-olds with $1 million in a 401k plan, all of those kinds of things. So we're really cautious about any. And in addition to that, so that makes up about 2/3 of the sample that we get. The other third comes from sort of our own, I guess you could call it a panel, but it's actually some investors that we've developed a relationship with over the years, who we started way back in 2005. We sent out hundreds and hundreds of hard copy surveys at that point, and people would fill them out and send them back, and we would send them $100. And it was really interesting. Over the years, we still have a core of those people. A lot of those people have passed away because it's been a long time. It's been 20 years. But we still have a core group of people that fill out these surveys for us. And then we're very confident that these people have more than $25 million because some of them we have met in person. One of them owned a Major League Baseball team. One was a big music producer. So they fill out these surveys and they represent now our older portion of the sample. So I'll go on and tell you a little more about this, because one of the challenges that we faced in recent years when we're fielding this is that I keep discussing with my younger people, like, there's too many young people in this sample. Why, there needs to be more baby boomers and older people. And they finally convinced me that this is what the world is like today. Millennials are actually wealthier and at a younger age than Gen X and baby boomers were. So I have to accept the fact. And also, I mean, demographically, if you look at the census numbers in the country today, there are more millennials than anybody else. So I guess it makes sense that there are a fair amount of millennials and a very small number of World War II generation individuals today in our surveys, but we feel like it's a pretty good sample. It's roughly over 160 people, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's more than the margin of error is 4%. So that's pretty good in this high-end demographic.
Yeah, it gives you really good, really good context, just what that demographic, it's a great representative sample of the demographic, the high net worth 25 million up demographic. So before we dive into it, some advisors who are listening might not have, in fact, many advisors that are listening might not have a client in the $25 million space. They might not even have a prospect in the $25 million space. But what would you say to advisors who historically have not attempted to compete in that market that they should think about that's, you know, gives them some hope and some opportunity that they could do it?
Well, I think the reality is they're just like anybody else, is one way to say it. I mean, they have the same expectations. They have the same concerns. It may seem like once you have $25 million, you don't have to worry about anything. But the reality is you do worry about that. You do continue to worry about your financial success. I would say that those in the $25 million plus range probably do demand a little bit more attention, a little bit more responsiveness. But they also are a little more tuned in a lot of times to exact to have $25 million. You generally have to be a pretty sharp person, right? So they probably ask a little harder questions sometimes than like my grandparents would be asking you.
Yeah. Our research and our anecdotal evidence has just shown us over the years that the $5 to $25 million, $5 to $50 million market is tremendously underserved. And that it's a group that if an advisor makes a dedicated effort to build a practice, to work with that marketplace, there's actually a lot of opportunity. And what I'd like, you know, if you're in our audience to think about, it's almost like that old story where, you know, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun the person that's next to me. And you can think about that in the sense of if you're working with the mass affluent, or you're working with clients with retirees with $1 million, so is everybody else. There is a ton of competition for those types of clients. But as you move up market to, you know, the 5 to 25, and even as we're talking about today, the 25 to 50, there's not a lot of competition. So there's less people that you actually have to be better than. You have to be really good. You have to be really good, but there's not a tremendous amount of competition. The family office space usually kind of kicks in the 50 to 100 million. We find that very competitive, very corporate family office structure. But these clients that we're talking about today, there's a real opportunity here. Don't you agree?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think that these individuals tend to have more interesting, their occupations sometimes drive a little bit of their net worth. Like you'll have a lot of business owners and senior corporate executives in this group. But we do find more and more that you'll find inheritors in this group as well, but not quite as much.
Yeah. So let's jump into look at some of the data here. And again, Kathy, you know, your great research with CEG Insights. This podcast is sponsored by the coaching firm CEG Worldwide, where we work with preeminent financial advisors to help them build an amazing practice and also an amazing life of significance by moving up market, because they can do it faster and easier than they ever thought possible. And so let's dive right into some of this research that we want our audience to understand about this $25 million marketplace. And you touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but I think what is shocking to a lot of people is what's highlighted right here is the demographic breakdown of the $25 million marketplace. If you would speak to that again.
Sure. So take a look. These are the individuals that answer our surveys. As you can see, 43% were millennials, 29% were baby boomers, and 23% were Gen X. and only 5% were World War II. I can tell you when I first started doing this survey, and I hate to admit it, the baby boomers were by far the biggest group. There weren't really any millennials, obviously, very small Gen X and a lot of World War II. So you can really see how our demographics are shifting in the wealth, in this wealth market here. And there's a lot of individuals in this market. So there's a lot of opportunity for you.
Yeah. Where in your experience are the millennials gathering their wealth? Are they inheriting it? Are they primarily now the entrepreneurs? Is it a mix of those things?
It's a mix. I would say, depending upon the year, we usually see between 18 to 23% of millennials have inherited their wealth. So that's a significant number, and the rest tend to be, you know, Silicon Valley types of individuals, or, you know, finance, or, you know, young people that are very successful who are these millennials. Mm-hmm. Just like the other older 25 million plus individuals, a lot of business owners.
Yeah. What we used to think, and there used to be data back when the Generation X was coming up, that there wasn't a lot of good data that said investing time with the older generation was going to lead to the next generation then working with the same advisor. But has that changed with millennials? Is there any data that would show us that millennials are actually very respective or prone to stick with an advisor if they were introduced by the parent?
We do see more and more data that says that. I can't give you the number right off the top of my head, but we've also done studies that have shown if you engage those younger people at an earlier age as the advisor, and I mean, not like 10, it can be 10. I mean, what are you going to do for the 10-year-old? But as they're entering college, you know, working with them to set up their accounts that they have at college, then you definitely are able to form a long-term relationship with that advisor, and you're more likely to be able to capture those children as part of a longer term. And even in keeping in touch with them and including them in meetings with the parents or whatever, some parents are okay with that, others aren't. But where we really see a break off is if you haven't formed a strong relationship with the family members by, say, 30, 32, then mm-hmm. they go off and get their own advisor and start to develop their own relationships. So we do see it if you are consistent about bringing in the younger generation into, you know, meetings with the parents and giving them advice and developing a relationship, then you're more likely to retain those young people.
Yeah. I always thought, because I'm right smack in the middle of Generation X, that unfortunately, it's just the truth. I think my whole generation grew up with whatever your parents said. It was like, I don't really give a lot of credence to that.
Yeah, I think that all generations are like that to some extent.
Yeah. But and the data used to kind of support that there just wasn't a lot of opportunity if you were introduced that you were going to, you know, maintain the next generation. But like you said, it's changing. The millennials seem to have, and I've seen other studies, you know, the millennials seem to be much closer to their parents and have quite a bit of put quite a bit of stock into, you know, their recommendations and what they do. So I think that's just a good piece of data. Yeah, we're talking specifically about the 25 million market, but for advisors out there, even if you're working with those 1 to 20, you know, some of your larger clients, invest some time in that second generation. And what were the ages again that your study showed that it's really good to catch them before?
Well, definitely before the age of like 30 to 32, that's when they start to really form their own relationships, because by then they probably have a decent chunk of money and a good job, and they're starting to think about what it is they want to do as opposed to living paycheck to paycheck. So that's really when you have to do that before then. And I do have to say, you know, we have a quote private banker, and I won't say where, but she's been tremendous with my kids, you know, like when they're going to college, and, you know, my 23-year-old is just like getting out of college and thinks she can call her private banker up. And it's like, come on. but she's really formed a relationship with my kids just by, you know, helping them with their checking accounts and, you know, making sure that they put money in savings versus checking. So now two of my children have really good, strong
accounts balances, and they're going to be good clients in the long term, you know, but it really paid off. So it really does make a difference.
Yeah.
I can speak to that.
Yeah. Good personal example. So in the $25 million market, you know, the first thing that we noted here that was really of interest was a surprising, perhaps, concentration in the age demographic weighted towards millennials, really quite a high number of millennials. And then what you and your team researched next in the report was, you know, what are the financial concerns of those individuals that are 25 million and up? And then this broke it down by, you know, these concerns by generation. But to your point earlier, I think the natural inclination would be somebody's got $25 million. They're completely different to work with. It's a whole different set of concerns. It's not the type of things that would normally be on my radar. But what does the research show is important when you ask about their financial concerns?
That these are basically the same financial concerns that we find regardless of your level of wealth. And even here, you can see it. I think, is this cut by age again? But as you can see, it doesn't matter by wealth what you are worried about. They're the same things. These are exactly the same concerns right now that we're finding across the wealth, across different wealth levels. So inflation is the biggest concern for all of your clients right now. So make sure you're talking to them about it, regardless of their age. Inflation is number one. Current banking crisis was a little bit more important to this group of investors than those with less wealth. So I can say that was sort of a difference, but I think that maybe this group is a little more worried about things like deposit insurance and large, you know, those types of things. The national debt, federal income tax increases, estate tax increases, maintaining your current financial position. Still 77.8% of these really wealthy investors are worried about maintaining their financial position. And then the others go, you know, state property taxes, stock market performance. 3/4 of these people are worried about stock market performance, regardless of their age. So these are pretty much the same concerns that you'll see with all of your clients who are worried about. They're worried about taxes. They're worried about, you know, the markets. They're worried about what's going to happen. They're having enough money to continue to live in the life that they're accustomed to.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting that the technical knowledge, if you will, that advisors have working with, you know, the mass affluent or the 1 to 5 million retiree is it's still super relevant. These are the exact same things that the $25 million market says that are concerning to them, that they're looking for solutions. Sure, there may be some different tools in the toolbox, and we'll give some ideas on, you know, that in a second. But, you know, really, it's the same concerns. It's the experience that, you know, they're really looking for to be different and to differentiate. One other thing, and again, this just additionally highlights not a tremendous difference between a typical investor, but yeah, what did the research say about risk tolerance?
Well, here, and it's probably not surprising that the wealthiest investors have a more aggressive risk tolerance, probably because they can afford to lose more. So if you look at that, 47% of these individuals are in the most aggressive category, and those numbers go up for the Gen X and the millennials. Millennials are at 59 and Gen X is at 66. But even those who say they're aggressive, not most aggressive, if 20%. So if you add those numbers together, you're almost at 70% of these investors say they're aggressive investors. Now that's a little bit different than our other wealth categories who may be more in the moderate side, but we still see younger people really being aggressive or super aggressive. So yeah.
So let's touch here on some ideas for driving growth and really being a preeminent advisor, tailoring your approach to the super affluent market, $25 million and up. And it's important, number one, to understand their values. And Kathy, we've talked about this on previous podcasts, but this is the idea of you just really have to do a deep discovery of each individual client to find out what's unique to them, right?
Right. One of the things that's interesting is, and in this particular group, it varies by age, as we've seen a lot, but living a life of integrity is really, of honesty and integrity is really important to this very wealthy group of individuals. And then for younger people in this group, you know, being able to give back is really important to them as well. So I think that that's pretty consistent that we've seen across our research by age, because we really see a lot of that. And some of it's just, how do you define it? You know, it's like living a life of moral, of integrity and honesty. You know, for older people, I see it, you know, they went to church, they gave to the church, you know, but younger people do it in a different way. But really these people are, have the same morals and ethics overall.
Yeah. Great point. The experience is really, Kathy, I think what the $25 million market and up is looking for. Mm-hmm. And these are the same issues they're concerned about, but it is, how are they being delivered? And one best practice that we see, and this is some framing that at CEG Worldwide, we teach advisors that we see just a tremendous amount of success with to help advisors move up market faster than they ever thought they could, is by the way that they frame their offering as a virtual family office. And what it really hits on is this $25 million and up market really appreciates the idea of a team approach to the delivering of wealth management. You know, they don't tend to believe that one person can be an expert in everything. They love the concept of a wealth manager who is a relationship manager, but then has the best of the best network that the wealth manager can then plug the client into for customized, optimized solutions. It's just a very, very powerful, powerful value proposition.
I go back to some of the things. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
But I go back to some of the things that we've talked about that are, that you would call advanced planning. But when you get to this particular group, these issues like estate planning and estate settlement and taxes are just as important almost as investment management. And those are things that they know that you can't know anything, everything about it, especially at this upper end, because there's definitely tax issues and tax loopholes and all of these things that experts know. But that's what's really important, to be able to bring someone like that into this discussion. Because even if you look back at that slide that we showed a few minutes ago, things that they're worried about, federal taxes, estate taxes, and state by state taxes, because now that's a huge, I mean, that's why everybody's moving to Florida, right? Because there are no state income taxes. So understanding all of those different things requires an expert, and they're not looking at you to be the expert. They're looking at you to bring the expert.
Yeah. I'm going to cheat a little bit, Kathy, and go back and actually highlight again, some of the things we talked about in our last podcast, where we were talking about an amazing life of significance, how individuals defined a meaningful life. And though that wasn't just a $25 million study, I know you said that kind of skewed up market. And I'm just going to throw up here for those that are on the visual feed, the slide, that, you know, what we saw in this other research is that a couple of the most important things are developing meaningful relationships with family and friends, and maintaining good physical and mental health. And I can just tell you from our practical experience, for advisors that are building a virtual family office business model value proposition, the ability to say to the high net worth market that they've got some resources in the health and wellness area, that the advisor is asking questions about the most important family relationships and personal relationships, and they're actively planning how they can use the person's wealth to enhance those things. These are really, really meaningful to the $25 million marketplace and really help the advisor stand out. So our recommendation for advisors today is, don't be afraid of the $25 million marketplace. And why is that, Kathy?
Because they're just like everybody else. But the most important thing is to be able to develop a network of experts that can help you when you come to these difficult questions about taxes or estate planning or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, you can do it. They're concerned about the same things, but they're looking for a different delivery mechanism. They're looking for that team of experts. They're looking for that great experience. And so when advisors are purposeful, and at CG, we help advisors do this in our coaching program about changing their value proposition to really move up and address the key concerns of the affluent. Very, very attractive. In fact, there's other research of the millennial marketplace that says over 90% of them are interested in the virtual family office business model. And so for a demographic that is becoming increasingly the controlling demographic of wealth, that's just great, great insights for you to have and for you to take advantage of. Well, Kathy, great, great stuff. I can't wait for the next podcast where we'll talk more about other things that you covered in this this great research of the 25 million marketplace.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody.
Quick reminder for those, if you would like a copy of the research report, the Play to Win report, that has all of the great research and much more than what we talked about today, you can go out to www.cegworldwide.com/podcast-report. And there you can get your personal copy of this great research, along with some really practical ideas of how to put it into place. All right, well, that will wrap us. We'll see you, Kathy, and we'll see all of you next time.
Bye-bye.